mid-July, summer progresses full of enjoyment with just a few messes. Around the campfire, rich or bourgeois, go for less disagreement and more kumbaya. This is Spectrum West. I'm Al Ross, belly flopping into your day with news, views, and personalities engaged in the arts, culture, and humanities found in abundance in western Wisconsin. Today, you're going to make the acquaintance of Sean Chambers, the enthusiastic new owner of 200 Main Art and Wine, a downtown Eau Claire establishment featuring, just as the name implies, his story is one of destiny, it seems. We're going to travel north and keep traveling north until we reach Bayfield, where sits Lake Superior Big Top Chautauqua and the people making it happen. Two of those facilitators, GM Kristen Walzak and musician Ed Willett, have previews of special collaborations happening and about to happen. You see, it's their 35 years of love comeback season. We'll also remember the wit and music of Mike Quick. And here's where we begin. We continue to check in on the world of pandemic emergence for many of the venues we cherish here in West Wisconsin. And this week, it's the historic Silver Dome Ballroom, a unique destination standing alone along a Clark County stretch of Highway 10. Most days it's quiet, but on special occasions, it radiates the light and sound for which it was built 88 years ago. Doug Myron, a Twin Cities public defense attorney, is the proprietor and keeper of the legacy. He simply fell in love and vowed to help her carry on her intended existence. The Dome has witnessed a whole bunch of stuff during its 88-year history, but a pandemic was not one of them. So now, because of what we're going to talk about today, you and the Dome can say that it survived yet another potential brush with termination. I've spoken with many people about many places and artistic venues since March of 2020 when all the doo-doo hit the fan. Tell me about, Doug, where your head was at that time, because, you know, old things can often be more fragile than others.
Yep. Well, for me, I was luckier than most because the Silver Dome is a part-time venture for me. I just operate as a special events hall. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not dependent on that, you know, for my livelihood or to pay the bills to keep the place going. So I was in a better place than most to weather this pandemic storm. And I just used the time to, you know, fix the place up even more. We painted the exterior, redid the floors, got another beautiful chandelier hanging in there. The place looks like $1 million, actually, and I can't wait to open it up and let everybody come in and see it and enjoy it.
A lot of people I talked to used the time to make some physical changes and upgrades. So good for you. The physical plant, as we've been talking now, is one thing. It's 88 years old and still upright. But the business end of things is quite another. Your events are perceived, as you said, as special events because the Dome is a commercial and historic venture that doesn't depend on the day-to-day. Did the pandemic pause provide you with any epiphanies about how to possibly come out swinging differently, or what's your concept for keeping this special place relevant?
Well, I didn't really come up with any different ideas other than that I think I'm going to try to focus more on public music events rather than private, you know, wedding receptions and things like that. Mm-hmm. You know, no offense to those wedding parties, but you know, the live music events are just more fun, you know.
Yeah, and you know, you sense it, obviously. The idea and the magic is to make, I think, I don't want to put words in your mouth, to make the Silver Dome Ballroom a destination, because that's what it is and it should be.
Yep, absolutely. And it almost has to be because of its location. I mean, we're kind of in the middle of nowhere, so almost no matter where you live, you got to drive a ways to get there. Mm-hmm. But my hope is to book maybe, you know, monthly events spring through fall, and like you said, turn it into a destination place people can look to every month for a special outing.
Yeah, back to the year, the pandemic year, I suppose, the mindset has always been and continues to be, hey, it's been around this long, we can't let anything take it now.
Oh, no. I love that place. I'll keep that going as long as I'm going, I'm sure.
Good for you. Doug Myron on the phone with us. We're talking about the Silver Dome Ballroom, and it is just west of Neillsville, as we all know. And if you don't know, it's time you go, folks. Okay, Doug, so you have a first show, kind of a reopening event coming in about a week. Tell us about it.
Yeah, Friday, July 23rd. This came about on such short notice that it's almost a pop-up show. Deke Dickerson, a nationally renowned singer, songwriter, guitarist, who writes a regular column for Guitar Player magazine, reached out to me actually to just stop and see the place because they're playing in the area that weekend in Black River Falls and La Crosse. Mm-hmm. And during the course of that conversation, it came about that, well, they've got that Friday open and maybe we can do something. And you know, I told him on short notice, I can't offer a ton, but if we can do it cheap enough, I'll just do it as a free show to welcome everybody back for live music. And so that's what we've got going. We've got free music on Friday, July 23rd with Deke Dickerson. And what I'm really excited about is the addition of Tony Andreasen, the leader of the Trashmen, who's going to join Deke and his band. They've recorded together in the past. In fact, Deke made a record with the Trashmen just back in 2018, a really great record. So they'll be doing Surfin' Bird and all of the old Trashmen favorites. It should be quite a hoot.
Is Tony the guy who did
Surfin' Bird?
No, actually, no. That particular part was done by the drummer who sadly passed away long ago. But Tony and the other band members do their best to recreate that part. It'll be fantastic nonetheless, I'm sure.
My band in high school played that song.
Oh, cool.
I did not know the drummer in the Trashmen did that, but our drummer in our band did that part too. Isn't that weird?
Oh, that's an interesting coincidence, yeah.
Well, as an 88-year-old, when you get knocked down, you might be a bit slow in getting up. Maybe walking before running is a good idea. What are you working on for the months ahead? Do you have any cats in bags that you want to tell us about?
Oh, yeah. We've got all kinds of great stuff lined up already. So on Saturday, August 7th, we've got Bill Kirchen, who's one of the founding members of Commander Cody's Lost Planet Airmen, a great singer-songwriter, Grammy-nominated fellow, playing August 7th along with Red Volkert, who was Merle Haggard's lead guitarist for many years. And Red is a Grammy Award winner in his own right for an instrumental that he recorded back in 2009. So those fellows are going to play together, a couple of blazing Telecasters, and they're going to be backed up by Eric Koskinen's band from the Twin Cities. And so Eric and his band are going to do a set as well. And they'll be also joined by Molly Mayer, well-known to Twin Cities audiences. And that afternoon, we're also going to have an old-time dance. The Rhythm Playboys are going to play from 1 to 5 that afternoon. So
Wow. That's
going to be a fantastic day of music on August 7th.
Busy day.
Yep, and then on Friday, September 3rd, the Friday of Labor Day weekend, we've got Rosie Flores coming, a well-known country rockabilly gal from the 80s, 90s, and beyond. Huh. She's known as the Rockabilly Philly. She's going to be playing Friday, September 3rd. We've got our annual blues party lined up for October 23rd with Reverend Raven and several others.
Got to mention Howard Guitar Lidke.
Oh, yeah. Howard is going to play that evening as well. Jay Stulo, Reverend Raven, and then Phil Kitsky. He's now based in the Twin Cities, but he grew up in one of those little towns near the Silver Dome, actually. Huh. So it's going to be the first time we have kind of an all-Wisconsin lineup for that cool blues party event.
A lot of blues and rock and roll and stuff. And having been in the Silver Dome and seeing that amazing engineering of the roof structure. By the way, how many places have you run across? I know there's an ice arena in Eagle River that has the same kind of roof. Are there?
Right, pretty similar. The one in Eagle River is pretty similar, not quite exactly the same,
but okay.
The Silver Dome is a one-of-a-kind building, actually.
Is it?
And that's one of the reasons it's on the National Register of Historic Places. That ceiling structure that you're referring to is called a lamella truss structure.
All right.
And there were plenty of them built like that back in the day. I don't think many of them are remaining.
No.
But the Silver Dome is the only one that has rounded bandshell style ends on it. All of the other buildings like that were built were squared off on each end like a barn is built, you know.
So does that have a quality relative to acoustics?
Absolutely, yes. It was built that way because the four Keller brothers who built and operated that place for quite a while all played in a family orchestra, and they thought for acoustic reasons it should have bandshell type of ends on it, and it serves the purpose. My goodness, you can stand at one end of that ballroom and speak in basically a conversational tone and be heard clearly at the other end.
Wow. So much good news, folks. The Silver Dome Ballroom is back. It's opening up, and be there on Friday the 23rd for what is deemed that reopening event.
By the way, that's a free show. Did I mention that?
You did, and I...
Yeah, I thought so. Yeah.
I don't think you...
Absolutely free. Come one, come all.
I don't think you mentioned it loudly enough. I mean, you can't beat that price, folks.
Nope, no. Nothing draws a crowd like free, free, free.
No. Okay, so where can we get information? Facebook page, website, what?
Both. You can find further information about the venue and these events at silverdomeballroom.net or at Silver Dome Ballroom on Facebook.
Doug Myron, we're excited to have you back and the Silver Dome. Thank you for what you're doing to keep her alive. Keep in touch, will you?
Thanks, Al, and thank you so much for informing all the folks of Western Wisconsin of all of these groovy things to do.
Oh, my favorite word. I use it.
Appreciate
I'm trying
it.
To bring it back. Good for you.
Yeah, I like it. I'll help you with that.
Okay, good. We're the Groovy Brothers.
All right.
Amen.
I like it.
Well, everybody's heard about the bird. Bird. The bird's a winner. Well, the bird.
Yes, back in 1963 when that song reached the top 10, it did not receive, by the way, a Grammy for lyric writing. Not a lot of nuance or associative overtones woven into that masterpiece. No, sir. The Trash Men, just one of the many profound bits of art that helped shape the man I became. This is Spectrum West on Wisconsin Public Radio. Good to be with you, Spectrum West, middle of July. Lake Superior Big Top Chautauqua has been an entertainment destination for 35 years. It's also been a beacon from which has shone the intimation that as we appreciate how creative people can get, it's their humanity and their relationships that are most important. It's the conscience of BTC and the people who make it work that many value the most. Always a fun place to be, it's also a right place to be. Two shows nestled within their 35 years of love season are a collaboration with writers and performers representing five Native American factions and another that both celebrates and worries about our environment. I spoke the other day with Kristen Walczak, Big Top's general manager, and celebrated writer, composer, and musician Ed Willett. Kristen, congratulations to you and your compadres on 35 years of love, as it's being touted, 1986. I'm going to guess that you haven't been around all 35 years, but I will also surmise, nonetheless, that you are feeling the love and that heritage means a lot up there.
Absolutely, yes. We are really, really excited about our 35th year. I have not, you're right, I have not been around since 1986, but I'm definitely happy to be part of what's happening this summer season.
Tell me about that excitement that's permeating this season. It's not just a 35th birthday, but also a rebirth of sorts after a very weird year.
Yeah, we did have to cancel our 2020 season, which was devastating to all of us here at Big Top. It was hard, it was emotional, and we are really excited to have people back at the tent and have shows on the stage. And we are trying to be as safe as possible. We have some reduced seating and on the tent and grounds, and it's going well. It's going really, really well.
Yeah, and you had a
bunch of June performances, and we've been through half of July already, so good for you. Now, let's talk first about a unique show, Anishinaabe Dabajamouin, an Ojibwe story. I called it unique, as you heard. How unique is that? Anything similar been done before up there?
Hey, Al, this is Ed here. I'm going to jump in because I'm in the band for that one. I got a look from Kristen, and it said...
Take it, Ed.
The unique nature of it. You know, I've been doing this 35 years. I haven't been in a show like it, but it's really impactful, ancient stories put over in a really beautiful way by many of the Ojibwe performers up here, mm-hmm. people from Red Cliff. And the band, the BCO, is in there as well, and our main goal is to just not get in the way, but just enhance a little bit.
Yeah.
So for the BCO, it's a very different experience. Severin Bainan has made a beautiful score, and it's coming together, but it's a little bit of an experiment, which is always really exciting, and I think people are going to really like it.
And it's been a couple of years in the making. This is the kind of thing that you'd have to think naturally generates positive things like perspective and collaboration and understanding. Of course, activities of which we can all use a whole lot more today. The collaboration is deep, including some of Big Top's best artists and technicians, plus artists from several native nations. Well, knowing the music as you do now, Ed, what kind of messages are we going to take from these performances? And are messages part of the intention?
Oh, definitely. Some of them are open for interpretation, but very powerful. People will interpret them differently, but they're all positive messages for sure. And then there's a little bit of social commentary, and is very artfully put over. But I think the main thing is, I hate to say the word heart, but that's what it is. There's a central boldness, a central inclusiveness that runs through the whole thing. And I haven't talked to Michael Charette about where a lot of this came from. Michael and Severin Bainan are the co-creators of the show, right? But from a player's standpoint in the band, that's my perspective on it. It's all hard. It's all just very, very strong messages.
Don't apologize for using the word heart. Again, back to the things we can use more of today. I'm glad it has tons of that. Performances are Friday and Saturday, July 30th and 31st. But the Sunday after, August 1st, the collaboration gets even more interesting. You have some Irish dancers coming. Who wants to tell me about that? They're going to interact with some of the First Nation people.
Yes, that's a collaboration project that's been in the works for a while, and we do have the Trinity Irish Dancers coming, and then Native Expressions Drum and Dance will be providing some rhythm for them to do their dancing with. We have a free family matinee for that performance at 1 p.m., then we'll have the evening performance at 7:30.
So yeah, there's a lot rotating around an Ojibwe story. And you can go online to read about it and all things Big Top. We're on the phone with Kristen Walczak. She is general manager up at Lake Superior Big Top Chautauqua, and also Ed Willett. He's a writer, a musician, and a wonderful one at both. While you're leaning into the speaker, let's talk about Dear Earth, a love song, letter of hope, because you, Ed, along with Betty Ferris, have put together quite a show. I know that you've done several things that are environmental in spirit. Tell me about the genesis of this particular show.
Well, Betty and I started and planned for this to premiere in 2020, the 50th anniversary of Earth Day, and that was what we thought we were going to do. Sure. Those got derailed, and then it was not only Earth Day, it was the Apostle Islands National Lakeshore's 50th anniversary, and those plans got dashed. So we thought we would take some of the preparation that we did for that show. It covers Gaylord Nelson and the Apostle Islands for sure, mm-hmm. but it goes other places as well. We kind of rounded out a show built on that start that we had a year and a half ago.
Okay, so describe it to us. It's a combination of what, music and visuals?
Oh, yeah. Music and imagery in the Big Top tradition, absolutely.
Okay.
The music, because I scored a lot of it, is string heavy. There's a bass, cello, viola, violin in the band. And so I wrote for that specifically. So it's lush images and lush sonic things.
Cool.
That's what we aimed for, and I'm really happy with it. And then there's some comedic things in it. I asked other writers to join me on this. Cheryl Leah, my partner, joined writing two of the tunes. Randy Sabine wrote a tune called Blasphemy, which he talks about how all ideas, when they're initially floated, are scoffed at and called blasphemy.
Uh-huh.
So it's a swing tune, you know, Randy. It's funny. It's very funny.
Yeah, he's a funny guy.
Yeah. It's a range, you know. We pay attention to pacing and what does this show need, and I think we did a pretty good job with it.
Neat. And the show has had a couple performances under its belt last week. There's another one coming up in August. There's a little bit of a separation. So does the show kind of stay in stone, Ed, or do you adjust for the next one knowing what you know after doing it a couple times?
Yeah, Kristen and I were just talking about that. I think that's one of the really great benefits of having some space between the performances. I think we're going to add just little bits, little sprinkles to the top of it, but it'll make it fun for people who are coming back again, because I know there's a lot of people who are going to come back on August 13th for this last performance. So there'll be something new for them, and I like that idea.
Dear Earth, a love song, letter of hope. Kristen, let's talk about the future briefly. Are there new generations ready to and grabbing the baton?
Absolutely. Myself, I started in 2019 as general manager, and then Philip Anich, who was the operations manager for 30 years, retired on June 30th.
Mm.
So we have a new facilities manager, Nick Hayes, who's come on board with us, and he is excited to take over Phil's reins and work on our facilities improvements. We have a great administrative team here and younger members as well of the Blue Canvas Orchestra who will carry the torch there. So lots more to come in the future with Big Top.
Good deal. Well, we have you on the phone, the Blue Canvas Club. How do we join and how important is that support?
Oh, the support is incredibly important. As a nonprofit, we do rely on our donors and supporters. You can become a Blue Canvas Club member on our website at bigtop.org. The Blue Canvas Club donation level is $125, and that's for an annual membership.
Mm.
You get the option to purchase tickets a week in advance of the general public, get a better chance at the better seats, and 10% off in our merchandise in retail stores.
Do you get a cool membership card made out of blue canvas, or what do you get?
That would be a neat thing. We do provide stickers.
Are they blue?
They are blue. They're,
oh, good.
They're a tent, a blue tent.
Because it's that swag stuff that gets me to join things.
Yes, everyone likes good swag.
Yeah, yeah. Now that you've described it, now I realize that I need to be a BCC member. Look for my entry.
All right.
Ring the bell. I did want to circle back and talk about, we mentioned the BCO in concert and Dear Earth and Anishinaabe Debajamoan.
Yes.
I do want to mention to the audience, if you can't make it to Big Top for those performances, we are offering live streaming for many of our performances this year. Check out our website for purchasing tickets to watch from home.
Is that one of those pandemic silver linings that you plan on possibly incorporating not just now, but going forward?
Yes. Yep. The live stream option was born out of the pandemic for us. Yes. It was something that we decided to jump on board with when we had to reduce our capacity at the venue.
Okay. Well, I'm holding your 2021 season schedule, and I get dizzy just looking at it. What I suggest is go to bigtop.org and get all the information that we may not have covered here. Kristen Walczak and Ed Willett, thanks so much for all the information. Break a leg. In fact, break several. And thanks for 35 marvelous years, and thanks for spending time with our WPR audience.
Thanks, Al.
Thanks for having us.
And with a little bit of music from that wonderful Ojibwe story show, a couple of memos for you. Sound of Music is playing at the Heidi Center in Chippewa Falls tonight through Sunday. Evening shows at 7:30, Sunday matinee at 2, cvca.net. Tonight, if you're listening on Thursday, the Sounds Like Summer Concert Series at Phoenix Park in downtown Eau Claire features Soren Staff, Jerrica Miguel, and Lasca. That all begins at 6:30. The World Goes Round is a musical review playing at the Red Barn Theater in Rice Lake through Saturday. Go to redbarntheater-ricelake.com and get more information. Hey, we all know that Pinot goes well with seafood. Rosé nicely complements cheesy things. Cabernet pairs well with steak and other red meats. But let's be clear, any kind of wine pairs well, very well, with an art gallery experience. Since its founding, it's been known as 200 Main Art and Wine. It'll be now known as 200 Main Art and Wine. Just an over-dramatization of the new role wine will be making, and I think new owner Sean Chambers is going to come close to offering as much variety as one could possibly hope for. Let's get ready for the new 200 Main by getting to know Sean just a bit better. Well, I have to say, Sean, that you have a most interesting bio relative to your relationship with Eau Claire and Western Wisconsin. You visited Eau Claire each summer to visit grandparents. That's not just an over-the-river and through-the-woods trip, is it? So your impression of Eau Claire is one that has matured right along with you. What kinds of things did you enjoy with your mom and grandparents in Eau Claire?
Al, thank you for having me on the show.
You bet.
Every summer I'd come out from Ramsey, New Jersey. I'd visit my grandparents.
Where is Ramsey, New Jersey?
Just outside of New York City. It's about 30 minutes from the city. It's as far north in New Jersey as you can get.
The moment I hear New Jersey, I think people are going to talk like this and it's going to be New Jersey.
So far, everybody I met out here says I don't have an accent.
You fit into Wisconsin. Well, so I'm sorry, interrupt.
Sure. So every summer I'd come out, I'd see my grandparents.
And who were your grandparents?
Dorothy and Jim Kamel.
Okay.
They had the EC Dental Lab.
Got it.
So we'd spend the summers up here, go out on the weekends to Wabasha, Minnesota, on the houseboat, jet skiing, fishing.
Cool. How different was that? See, I think people have misconceptions about the state of New Jersey. You know, there's not a lot of good stuff that people hear about New Jersey, and yet I think it's a pretty state as you travel around.
It is. It is a pretty state. There is fishing out there. It's just, it's different. It's a little bit faster pace, a little bit tighter together out here. Everything seems to be a little bit more spread out, a little bit more laid back.
Did you feel as if you had to go into New York every once in a while just to legitimize your residence?
Growing up, we'd go into the city all the time, and out of college, I ended up moving to the city for a couple of years for work. So I studied finance, moved to New York City after graduating to work at the New York Stock Exchange, lived there for a few years, and then I decided I wasn't a big fan of the finance. I wanted to find something a little bit more exciting, so I ended up working at the local wine store in New Jersey.
Well, there you are. New York Stock Exchange, that's kind of fast lane.
Very fast, as fast as it gets. Huh? Everything comes down to a matter of seconds.
I suppose a person finds out whether they're made for that or not very quickly.
Yep, and I'll continue to trade, and I still keep in touch with a lot of the people down there. It's just it's a big difference trading other people's funds versus your own.
Yes. I'll bet, yeah. So I can come to you for inside information.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe not. So how long, when you came to Eau Claire, how long did you stay in the summers?
At least a couple weeks.
Okay.
We spent a few holidays out here as well, but it was really just the summers that I'd always look forward to.
Yeah. Was it tough to go back to New Jersey after being here?
It was always really special coming out here.
How early do you, as a kid, do you remember coming here?
My whole life.
Really?
There's pictures of me as a baby coming out here to Eau Claire.
No kidding.
Wow. Can't tell you how long I remember. But
and you're a big guy now. When one reads that bio and listens to what you've just told me, it feels as though you purchasing this space has been part of your destiny for quite some time. Tell our audience about your relationship with art first, and then we'll talk about Sean the sommelier.
Sure. So I first got interested in artwork back when I was in high school. I used to go around to garage sales, antique shops, looking for interesting pieces of artwork that I'd turn around and sell online or to people I met along the way. And then throughout college, I studied finance, but I took a bunch of art history classes.
Oh, did you?
I always had this passion for artwork.
Were you an artist?
I'm not an artist, and I think that's why I'm so interested in the art, is because I appreciate what other people can do. Because I personally can't use my hands to create the art. I can't figure it out, and I think that's why.
You say that, but have you tried and failed, or have you? Or people are going to encourage you, you know?
Yep, I have a bunch of acrylic paint, and I have a canvas sitting on my desk back at the house, and I'm trying to figure out what I want to paint, and until I have it completely visualized, I'm holding back on painting it. But when the time's right, I'm going to pick up the brush and give it a shot.
Okay. I'm a stick person guy, so I sympathize with that. Okay, so you were talking about buying and selling art even as early as high school.
Yep, early as high school. And even when I was working at the New York Stock Exchange, I always look around for different pieces of artwork.
What did you look for? Did you look for things that you liked, or did you look for things that you thought you could flip easily, or what?
I'm a big history buff, so a lot of the artwork that I dealt with was 19th and 20th century oil paintings. So New Jersey has a lot of history, a lot of older buildings out there, so it was possible to come across a lot of pieces that are 100 years old, 150 years old. And I just thought the thrill of the hunt, going out there and finding this painting that's been around for over 100 years was really interesting, and something that just stuck with me. And then while I was working at the wine store, I opened up a art brokerage, online art brokerage, Atlantis Fine Art, and there's a lot of demand for contemporary art in New York City. So that's when I started onboarding a number of contemporary artists. And so it's a nice blend between pieces that are 100, 150 years old and artwork that's still being created today.
And so, Sean, that kind of art guy, does he continue doing that? Or are you going to, in your new venture here in Eau Claire in western Wisconsin, will you be a different kind of?
Well, the way 200 Main has been for the last couple of years is it is contemporary artists and a lot of local artists. And I love the feel of that. And I want to keep the local artist. And I've met with a bunch of them.
Good.
I do have a few older pieces I'm going to hang up, but I really don't want to ruin the local feel to the gallery. It's beautiful the way that the previous owners had set it up.
Lots of good artists around here. You know, surprisingly, I mean, when I moved here too, it was a long time ago, I couldn't believe. Every time I turned around, I met people who had talents in art and music and visual arts.
I think one of the biggest challenges I'm going to have is there are so many great artists around here, and there's not enough wall space for all of it. So finding the collection of artists is the hardest part.
Yeah. We're in the studio with Sean Chambers. He's the new proprietor at 200 Main Art and Wine. Terry Meyer and Joellen Burke, previous owners, and they've been on our program several times, and we've visited the gallery often, maybe not often enough. And I promised folks in that two-part question that we would get to Sean, the wine guy. So you worked in a wine store. What'd you do there?
I did. So leaving finance, I wanted to find something that I was interested in for a while, but wanted to dive in a little bit deeper. So I ended up working at a wine store out in New Jersey near my hometown. And I started off just stocking the shelves, cashier, and then within a year worked my way up to being one of the key persons. So I was pretty much one of the go-to wine people there. They sent me to the wine school and basically paid me to teach me about wine. And it's an interest that I'm continuing to pursue. And when I was planning on moving out here from New Jersey, I wanted to get involved with something either regarding artwork or wine. And I met Joe and Terry at 200 Main Art and Wine, and it just seemed like a perfect combination. Kidding.
That's what I mean by this feels like destiny. The two things that Sean Chambers has fallen in love with and done just because he's interested in them are the things that 200 Main does and features. But you are going to expand it. I mean, Joe and Terry, they had wine as kind of an amenity when you were there viewing the art. You are expanding that. If I stopped in and saw your wine racks, you're going to have it by the bottle, etc.
And we're going to have 200 different wines. So 200 wines at 200 Main.
Well, there you go. Hey, oh, I didn't put that together. Good for you. I'm a little slow there. So, so your relationship with wine is what? You a wine lover?
I enjoy it.
Yeah.
I do. And I enjoy talking about it. I enjoy learning from customers about wine, and everybody has a different palate.
Interestingly enough, there are wineries that have popped up basically all over America. So you don't have, I mean, I've been to Napa Valley and the wonderful places, so well known for wine. But you know, there are vineyards.
I went to one yesterday.
In Riverbend. Yeah, sure.
There you go. Chippewa.
And along the St. Croix River and along the Mississippi River. So good for you. And you plan on featuring those regional wines as well?
Oh, yeah. We'll have plenty of wines from Wisconsin, California, all across the United States, countries all over the world. And I hung up a map. I'm going to label each of the 200 wines, 1 through 200, and find their corresponding spot on the map so that when people come in, they can visualize where the wine they're drinking comes from on the map where it places in relationship to other wines.
Good idea. I'm going to get philosophical here for a second. Sure. 200 Main, of course, is a business, right?
Right.
And it's only a few years old, but it already has a bit of a legacy, and you're stepping in to protect and enhance that legacy. Galleries have a unique distinction of not feeling like a commercial venture, but rather an amenity or kind of like one of life's pleasures. You know what I mean? Therein lies a revealing fine line for you for how to maintain this place.
Sure.
Because it has a reputation, it has a legacy, and it has a certain feel. Do you empathize with all that?
That feeling you're talking about, I felt that when I walked in.
You did.
And the way that Joe and Terry explained it from the start was it was a welcoming environment where people could come in, they could taste wine, look at artwork, meet local artists, meet other members of the community, and we're going to keep all that going. Cool. And we're going to have author readings, educational lectures, wine tastings.
200 Main, Art and Wine is the name of the place. You know where it is. It's at the corner of...
On Main Street between Barstow and Graham.
Yes.
It's 900 feet from the Pablo Center. It's a 10-minute walk from the Phoenix Park. So it's walking distance from the downtown farmers market. And every Saturday, we're going to be doing the wine tastings.
Hmm. Were you out there with a tape measure for the 900 feet?
Looked it up this morning.
You did? Okay. So 200 Main is going to stay the same. Ambiance is big, while at the same time, you're going to get a bit bigger in scope and presentation.
Right. The only difference between how it's been the last couple of years and what I'm going to do with it is increase the amount of wine we have.
Yes.
When I first met Joe and Terry, I think there was 5-10 different bottles, so we're bumping that up to about 200.
And they have that cool dispenser, which you're going to continue.
We're keeping
the
wine
the
dispenser,
glass.
Right? So people can just come in and they can pour themselves any of the 8 wines that they want.
That's an impressive machine.
That'll rotate every month.
I like that. You, being a wine guy, probably have seen many of those.
I think it's the coolest thing.
Yeah.
I've never seen it.
Well, I walked into 200 Main the first time, and they had that, and I went, wine is high tech now. All right, so tell us about this Saturday. You got a biggie coming up.
Yep, this Saturday, it's the first day that we're going to be open. So it's the grand reopening this Saturday, July 17th, from 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. We're going to have various wines to sample, and some new artwork in there, along with all the local artists that everybody's loved for all these years.
Here's a good question. Are you going to break a wine bottle on the cornerstone to begin the voyage?
I hope not. I've been working so carefully to not knock over any bottles yet, and it's going to come. And
you
got to
have an old... I mean, it's like launching a ship. I pictured you doing that. I mean, you can sweep up the glass. I thought that would be symbolic, huh?
For good luck?
Consider it.
I will.
Well, a belated welcome to West Wisconsin, Sean Chambers, all the best fortune going forward. And thanks to Terry Meyer and Joe Ellen Burke for launching the ship, and to you for assuming the captain's chair. It appears as if you were made for this, man.
Thank you, Al.
This is Spectrum West on Wisconsin Public Radio. Because of and thanks to what I do here, I have the privilege of being a first namer with a whole bunch of good people. Visual artists, writers, venue directors, agents, promoters, entertainers, humanitarians, you the audience, the patrons of all this marvelous imagination, and of course, musicians like Mike Quick, who although he left our material midst last week, will always be in our spiritual one. My friendship with Mike, good example of a phenomenon. We didn't hang out, but he was a good friend nonetheless. Music created that bond. And not just with me, but with everyone who showed up to hear him sing and or purchased his CDs. Through his songs, we got to know him, and he us. That's what music does. It introduces, celebrates, consoles, lectures, inspires, it hugs, and often, in Mike's case, it tickles. Mike was a guest on Spectrum West back in April of 2011, along with musical buddies Yatta and Howard Lidke. They were promoting a performance coming to the Mabel Tainter.
Well, who wants to tackle the story about how this whole concept got started? The singer-songwriter showcase. I see fingers pointing at Mike Quick. Here he is.
About a year and a half ago, I was at Midwest Folk Alliance, basically a networking situation. Singer-songwriters, people who have venues, and DJs, too. We sat around after a showcase I played in, and we threw out the idea of a possibility of a singer-songwriter showcase.
And how did you go about figuring out who was going to be involved? Or was it just kind of a natural thing? There were some people who stood out.
Well, you know, we went through the singer-songwriter dating program, and it was... No, we didn't. I think we talked about maybe four acts that would work probably best in terms of the amount of time we had. And we wanted to keep them all a little bit different. And I think that each of the acts that are involved in the show have a unique style and different approach to songwriting and music.
You've got some pretty impressive careers. I have a calculator here. If you want to add up all the numbers of years that are combined, you probably have 100 and...
We don't want to do that. Mm-hmm.
You don't?
Which two of us would?
Yeah, which two of us? Yeah.
To go over 100, you mean?
100, yeah.
I'll bet Howard and Mike and I have probably 40 years each, individually.
So we're at 120 to begin with.
Yeah, right there.
Well, are we still playing? We're not playing professionally now, are we?
Yeah. Oh, okay. It's been a lifetime.
Yeah. Whatever. Yeah.
When does that, speaking of what you just said, when is that moment when you go from not professionally to professionally? When does that happen?
Probably when you get paid for it.
Oh.
Are you getting paid now?
It's going the other way now. It goes up, it goes down.
It's the oil shortages, Howard, that are
that's gotta
responsible
be it.
For that, I think.
So do you all consider yourselves professional musicians?
Oh, yeah. I think so. Yeah. Definitely.
You have to, I suppose, in order to...
To get on a show like this.
I remember
this.
Sure. When I was in my early 20s, and I was in a band, and we were playing real regularly, and it just dawned on me that, hey, I'm a professional now. I think it becomes a conscious that, I'm devoting a lot of time to this.
And you probably at that point wonder how long that's going to last. Or did you think, yeah, I'm going to do this the rest of my life?
No, I gave myself 5 years.
Did you?
It wasn't working out in 5 years. I thought I'd do something else.
And then every 5 years after that, you re-up?
Five-year extension plan?
5-year plan. Yeah, just extend that.
I think the moment I realized that I was professional was one of my uncles died, because every time I'd see him on the street, he'd say, why don't you get a real job?
They say that to people who are in broadcasting.
No kidding. I feel better now.
Simply because we don't tote that bale and lift that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's called the Singer-Songwriter Showcase. So that means that each of you is both a singer and a songwriter. Mm-hmm. You know, of those two responsibilities, is there one that stands out? In other words, what's more satisfying, writing a song or then eventually performing it or writing it for someone else?
I like performing myself.
Yeah.
My songwriting, I just got sick of paying royalties on other people's songs. That's why I wrote some songs, so I didn't have to pay royalties.
Yeah.
I guess that makes me a songwriter.
It does.
Okay. You paid royalties on other people's songs?
I'm supposed to do that. You know?
Do you want to record some of mine?
I've charged too much.
And Howard works with his as a solo as well as with his longtime blues band Blue Max. So
right,
try to keep busy. Yeah, I've kind of evolved from playing in rock and blues bands, electric stuff, and mostly performance based stuff. To my interest is primarily in writing a song, but then performing it acoustically these days. I've been on that track for about 5 years, and I enjoy that.
Yada.
I'm always writing. Once I think a song is ready to be performed publicly, then I'll take it out. When I do my shows, I always try to have new material. That's a big part of it for me, so my shows are always evolving. Once a song is at a certain point where it's still fresh and vibrant, then I like to record it.
I then went on to ask each one where inspiration comes from. And Mike, in his usual expected and appreciated playfulness, had this answer.
I have to say that I draw a lot of inspiration from public radio.
As many people do.
And primarily your show. Speaking of royalties, yeah. Oh, here we go, man. It could be an encounter with a person or people. It could be a news headline. For instance, my mother used to have this annoying habit when I was in sixth grade of trying to line me up with girlfriends, and they were always girlfriends who were I knew I was in trouble right away. She'd say, "Michael, got this girl. Her name's Norma, and she's just got a great personality. She's a lovely person. She's just a little husky." And there was a long line of that stuff. And then,
is there a song, Norma, that's part of your?
Well, no, but Norma actually was
husky.
Husky, yeah, she was husky. I'm going to have to write one now. Okay. Norma the husky.
Oh, I thought you were leading into a song.
I am in a roundabout way, but as it turned out, Norma not only was husky, she had big hair. And I have a song called Big Hair that's based on that experience.
And it sounds like Norma had enough attributes. She's good enough for 3-4 songs.
Well, there's plenty of material there, yes, Howard. Al, it is. Sorry about that.
I get mistaken for Howard all the time.
I can understand why. And vice versa. Yeah.
Mike Quick also had a warm, sentimental side. He lost his wife, Beth, a bit over a year and a half ago. He was proud to be a caregiver. And now I imagine him singing this to her once again. It's called Chickadee, his gift to her on a 2004 CD.
Mr. Chickadee, Sister Lady Chickadee, I love the way you fly with your gorgeous wings. Tail feathers held up so high. They said that birds of a feather will flock together. Let me get this off my chest. I'm tired of talking. I'm ready. Chickadee, won't you feather my nest? Sometimes I think when I'm on the wire, how you pick me up and help me fly higher, so close to the sun.
Yes, Mike Quick left a lot of friends behind. But thankfully, he left a lot of good music behind as well, so he'll never really be too far away. Well, that wraps it up for Spectrum West this week. Next week, a new book of verse from Jeannie Roberts. We'll look back on the first Midwest Artist Academy. We'll get ready for a film festival. And there's always more. Don't hesitate to share things, folks, and people you'd like to hear about and from. You can email us at spectrumwest@wpr.org. Thanks to Kate for promotion and Rick for supervision. And thank you guys, especially. Visit WPR.org to listen to or load some past programs. I'm Al Ross. See you next week.